Well, hello. This is Kay Ballard, and you are at Women Are Not Funny Radio, where we, on occasion, try to prove our premise wrong. Well, I confess, I am quite alarmed by the fact that this is the second week of Fitness Month on Women Are Not Funny Radio, and I can't help but notice that I am still not fit, and I am totally alarmed by this. But today's guest is Helen Clark, and not only is she funny, she is actually a personal trainer who cares so much for her clients that she actually makes house calls, or in this case, radio calls. So she's with us today, and the things I must ask her, because I have no other choice, it's only for my own self-protection. I have to know, I have to put this conversation in context. Helen, are you using your appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio as a stepping stone for something better?
Well, Kay, my plan is always to use everything as a stepping stone to something better. And if I could just reach through the phone line and reach through the microphone and grab you and get you fit in an hour, I think that might be a good way of becoming something better. Is it possible?
You know what? If you could do that, that would be so appreciated and so amazing. That could actually propel you to something quite a bit better. So there, I hate to ask because you're being very gracious, but it's once again for my own self-protection. Are you here today kind of as a tryout in order to take over my show?
Kay, ever since I first heard your voice, I've been feeling so threatened by you that the only thing that I could possibly be here for is to just knock you right off of any kind of radio show you could ever have and just take over altogether. That's my plan.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? You have a golden way with words, not only in the words you have chosen, but the way you speak. And all of our listeners have noticed, I'm sure, that you have something of an accent from a country that we love. You are from Great Britain, even though you're now very much an American, right?
I am definitely from England. I'm actually from London, really, truly London. And, yes, I'm definitely an American. I became a citizen when I found myself yakking too much about politics and decided that I needed to be able to vote. So that's what finally got me to be a citizen. Plus, I love America.
You know, that is something I definitely wanted to talk with you about today, but I had planned for dealing with it a little later, but let's just get right into that. Because one of the things that is so much fun and is so funny about your social stream is that you love to tweet about politics. And you actually, and, you know, I genuinely appreciate this as well as get a lot of pleasure from it. You do live tweeting of Senate hearings.
Yes. I seem to pick events, Kay. I mean, but it's not just restricted to politics. I mean, I live streamed the Masters Golf Championship. I do that too. And, I was watching if it's on and I'm watching it, and I usually get very riled up about stupid stuff, so I can't put certain channels on because I know that I'd be trying things at the TV, and so then I start tweeting. Yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun.
Well, it is hilarious, and, you know, it's one thing to watch the Masters. It's another thing to watch it on Twitter being live tweeted by Helen Clark or at Chloe Beadle, as her Twitter handle is. But, you know, it crossed my mind, Helen, as I have been watching you tweet, and you're right, you tweet politics, but that's not the only thing you tweet. You live tweet other things, okay? But the thing that fascinates me is when you live tweet the Senate. I mean, I'm spellbound. And I have this little scenario in my head, this little plan for you. How do you feel about kind of putting me in charge of planning your career?
Kay, I think that would be absolutely fantastic. I just love that idea.
You know, I would make all the decisions, call all the shots, you know, essentially kind of order you around and boss you around, tell you what to do. But I was thinking it would be fantastic. Well, let me just say this. There, from time to time, people point out, just various people, and this has been going on for as long as I remember, and I'm sure it goes to the very beginning of the institution. People have pointed out that our Senate, our U.S. Senate, is largely comprised of older, fat, white men.
Yes.
Have you noticed that yourself?
Yes.
Well,
I have.
I think you have noticed it, and it's hard not to notice, but just imagine how lovely it would be if, you know, there's several ways that we could go about changing that. I mean, one is we could elect different people, right? I mean, we could elect people who are young, fit, you know, of diverse genders, diverse races, diverse backgrounds, and so forth. We could do that. However, I think since that is unlikely to happen, you know, in the foreseeable future, I mean, I think if I lived to be 300, perhaps I would see that. But since that's not likely to change in the foreseeable future, I would, as your, you know, newly appointed career advisor and really career czar, I would kind of like to see you become the official personal trainer for the U.S. Senate.
Kay, that is just a fantastic idea. I actually teach a senior program in Jersey City now where my most senior lady is 93 this year. So I'm ready for them. I think it's a great idea. I could just jump up on that podium and put the music on and get them moving.
Exactly. And you are right. I mean, apparently, once you're in the Senate, the idea of, you know, it's changed a little bit, but for the most part, those guys hang on to those Senate seats until, you know, death do us part, don't they? I mean, it becomes something of an appointment for life. So the fact that you are accustomed to training someone in her 90s, you know, I think that's a really good credential to bring to the job.
You know, you really have something there, Kay. I think we need a press kit or something with just saying, I can keep you alive so you can stay in the Senate till you're 125.
Well, and then the voters can be real happy about it, too, because they don't have to even think about who they're voting for. They just go and vote for their regular senator, you know, as they're accustomed to doing. But, see, this could be really big, Helen. This could be really big. I can see you arrive. This could be a movie. You know, it could be not only could it be a gig as the official trainer for the U.S. Senate, but since you are also a trained actress with a career on the stage, you would have to be very excited about the possibility that this would also just become a major motion picture.
Yeah. I mean, I would take baby steps. First of all, I'd be thrilled that I was actually in front of 100 people, making them jump, getting them into exercise. And then, you know, it could just build up from there. And, of course, the long-term ambition is have the radio show exactly opposite Rush Limbaugh's show so that we could have fit, healthy senators, you know, phoning in to me and being some kind of competition there.
Well, that is really amazing to imagine. I could see you kind of arriving, you know, when I think about it becoming a major motion picture, I can envision film footage of you arriving on the Capitol steps, you know, and announcing that you have arrived to essentially remake the Senate, remake the U.S. Senate, and it will just really be an amazing thing. Now, there is something, though, that we have no way of knowing what the outcome would be, because if those guys started getting blood flowing to their brains, you know, what then? That's something we have no knowledge of, you know, what that would be like.
I think that's basically a really scary thought. I think it's really good when a lot of them sort of nod off every now and again and sort of fall away into the background. I think that's good. I think I should come with some kind of feather bowage or something to, you know, hand out and get them moving.
I don't know. I mean, what you just said was kind of a scary thought. I agree with you. When they nod off, there are some advantages. Maybe this is something we should rethink. I don't know. I mean, I know that you are a woman of action, and I certainly want to be described that way as well, but still, this is the U.S. Senate. We maybe ought to take a little care on this one. Maybe the better way would be just to, you know, kind of talk a good game, provide them with some I Be Fit, So Be You t-shirts, or, you know, I Know Helen Clark t-shirts, or I don't know.
That would be really good.
I think
they don't appear to be great people that change their mind too much. And the one thing about getting fit, the getting fit part is easy. It's the deciding that you want to get fit that's hard. So once you get to the point that you're ready, you can really do it. So these guys, it's really hard to get them ready to do anything. So I wouldn't really worry. I think, you know, think that we could just do a great thing here, Kay, and make it seem like they're actually going to do something, you know, fitness-wise. My guess is they probably will, you know, business as usual, and we're okay. They'll be out smoking cigars and having a good time and, you know, yabbering away to each other. And
well, that is true. They are very good at that, at putting the spin on. They are very good at that. That's very true. So, you know, what you just said, though, was, I think, a real pearl about the whole mindset required, and that may be part of my current problem. But, Helen, something you don't know about me, and I think not many of our listeners do, is that I had kind of a reverse career path to yours. I was an aerobics instructor some years ago, back when dance aerobics was first the vogue. I was a certified aerobics instructor with a program called Rhythmic Aerobics, but that was a whole lot like Jackie Sorensen's aerobic dancing, very choreographed and so forth. And I did that and loved it, absolutely loved it, and my clients loved it, and it was fun. It was, you know, once again, now kind of totally out of style because it was very dancy and very poundy, and we did it on cement floors usually. But what I think about now is, you know, at the time, the reason I quit doing that is that was not my kind of my education path, and I saw the field professionalizing and realized that if I wanted to stay in it, I need to get a degree in exercise physiology or something like that, and that's not what I wanted to do. I was headed to law school. But how dumb to have left the field of fitness, because when it's your job, my goodness, you know, that was my experience. I didn't ever have to worry about will I work out, will I not work out, because I had clients who had paid me. And so, of course, I was going to work out. That was, you know, that was my duty. Can you relate to this at all?
Yeah, definitely. I last weekend I did a race, and I had low blood iron most of the year and last year. And then the next day, a friend of mine dragged me on a hike. And then then I had classes to teach on Monday, and a class on Tuesday, and then I had a client that wanted to run on Wednesday, and by the time Wednesday came, I was so tired that I had to go out and run. But actually, Kay, the physical part is always doable. You can always sort of teach a class at that level. I'm not saying you can go out and do a marathon, but the when it's really good is when you're not very happy, when someone's not particularly happy, the best thing they can do is exercise, and the last thing they want to do is exercise. And that's true of me too, but I don't have a choice, so I have to exercise. And after I exercise, I always feel better. And that's kind of what I always, that's the one thing I try and get my clients and everybody on the planet to connect. If you exercise, try and remember how you feel the next day. You will always feel better than the day before. And once people get that, then it's not such a big, huge hardship to go out and, you know, walk for 20 minutes or do something.
Well, that's absolutely
right. Did I know
what's
up with that?
Well, I think it's so fabulous that, you know, to do as a career for that very reason. But, you know, I mentioned, and you, this is not the first time you've realized this about me, Helen, that my favorite thing to talk about in the whole entire world is myself. And so I spend as much time doing that as possible. But I would like to devote a little bit of time to you know, just for appearance's sake. And you have had this wonderful career on stage as an actress, and I tell our listeners that you are actually still a member of Screen Actors Guild. And what kind of interests me, I mean, that interests me on a lot of levels, but that organization is widely known by its acronym of SAG or SAG, and I just don't know how a personal trainer can tolerate having SAG associated with her name.
There you go. Yeah. I think that the SAG and the equity were pre the ACE certification and the training. But I get it. I get what you're saying. But I don't think, well, you could try, Kay, but I think the name of our movie shouldn't be, well, I guess it could be SAG. Maybe SAG will change their letters for you. That's the only thing I can talk about there.
I don't know, but you know, how delightful to have spent those years on the stage and apparently in a lot of different traveling touring companies. So tell me about that a little bit.
Well, it was really my drama school. They came. It was actually a really interesting time because I was so young. I was only 16, but it was the 1970 or 1969. I came on my first tour, and I was just 16. I was the youngest person on the tour, and we went to the universities here. We were in Berkeley, and we were here when it was so much turmoil happening. And we brought a play called Marat Sade, which is about the French Revolution, and we did it in Eau Claire in Wisconsin, and we did the play once. It's set in a lunatic asylum, and the students wouldn't leave because they were so into the revolution thing, and then, you know, we had to do it twice. So that was really an interesting kind of time to be here and see America, and I fell in love. I'd always loved America. I loved the cowboy shows, Gunsmoke, and I was in love with Alias, Smith and Jones, and all those old cowboy TV shows. And there's a reason to come to America. And of course, I thought, thinking about all about me, I figured I would be English, different, and therefore, you know, rich and famous in a bat of the eyelid. So I went home and came back and came on another tour. And I think the first job I got was summer stock in South Dakota, and it was the spring. It was the summer of 72. So if anybody who's listening from South Dakota, that was the year of the big. There was a huge flood in South Dakota, and I was right in the middle of that. That was my first acting job, and there was a picture on the front of my paper at home in London, and it said, "I'm safe. Call from flood victim." And my father was on the phone with the American Embassy trying to find out. A lot of people were killed. It was quite dramatic. Anybody in the West would know about that.
Would remember. Yeah. Well, as you know, there are so many people who are in this country who have never been to South Dakota and will never get there. So even South Dakota is relatively exotic by some people's standards. But here's what I want to know. Obviously, if you were already making it to the States and touring at age 16, you started your career in acting and music at an earlier age. So what led you to the stage?
Well, I danced since I was four. And then in London, there, at the time, there was an operatic society that had, used to do two-week revivals of musicals. And they performed at the Scala Theatre in the West End in London, which was then the biggest house. And they needed a little girl to play, I remember the line, it was Finian's Rainbow. And she said, the little guy, Og, I think his name's Og, was a leprechaun. And I think she was telling the children, my line was, she wanted a doll. And a little doll with two pink curls that wiggles her ears and blows her nose. That may not be exactly right. But that line was sort of my line in the musical. And the audience, there was this little 8-year-old kid doing this thing, and the audience loved me. So I figured this is the way to go. If everybody's going to love you, I'm going to be an actress. So that was the start when I was 8. So I went to children's drama school, then I went to real drama school, then I kind of did quite a lot of shows actually on 42nd Street and those theaters along there. And then I found myself talking about this as much as that. And so that then this came about from there.
How funny. You are so naturally funny. Did you ever think about a career in comedy?
I didn't, but I watch these people and I think, wow. I do think they're fabulous. I always think that about you too, Kay. I think that you're just naturally funny. Maybe we should have like what's those two? Lewis and Martin and Lewis team. You and I, we could have the Southern accent and the English accent. We could do something together.
Well, there you go. That sounds like a delightful idea. We could just go around from city to city and do marathons. I would respectfully, suggest that maybe half marathons that have, and maybe most of them do anymore, have a half marathon. But we could go around and from city to city, do a half marathon, do our comedy gig, and then what? Eat ice cream, I suppose.
And do a radio stint, Kay.
Well,
you have to put the radio in there.
There you go. And there
the live comedy, the radio, the marathon, and the movie.
exactly. Now, I am intrigued, though. In the meantime, I am intrigued by the fact that what you are doing as personal trainer, you are willing to go to your clients. And that is such a wonderful thing, because I was thinking about it, and Helen, I hate working out in a class, and part of the reason is because it is social, and so you have to dress for it and look real cute, and then you have to try to, they always say, I said the same thing when I was teaching exercise classes, work at your own pace, blah, 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 blah. But I'm very competitive, and I want to be good. And so there's that kind of pressure. And then I hate working out alone because it's just lonely and boring, and you don't know if you're getting it right or if your form is good or if you're accomplishing what you need to accomplish. So if you hate working out in a class and you hate working out alone, that doesn't really leave too much, does it?
No, I would basically say that most of my clients don't like gyms, my individual clients, I'm not talking about class, they don't like gyms, and they don't really like, some of them like to exercise. Like I have a man now, gentleman now, he's 62, and he wanted to run a marathon. So he wanted to do it by the time he was 60. So we didn't make that. But we're both actually going to do the New York Marathon in November. So he's going to do that, his first marathon at 63. So sometimes I'll get someone who's very goal oriented. They really are excited about trying to do something, and then I'll have other people that just hate just hate with a passion exercise, and the only way they know they have to do it because they're smart, but they really hate it, so they make me come and get them to do it. It just depends, you know, you have all sorts of people.
Yeah, well, that sounds perfect. I am totally fascinated by the fact that your clients are of both genders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have, usually I have more women. I have a lot of women who are sort of in their mid-40s who, you know, career women that just don't have the time. I have women that just don't want to think about it. They just want to work out. But for some reason this year I seem to have, I've always had a few men. Like my oldest client is a man. I've had him for maybe 14 years or something, and we're still working out. But this year I seem to be pretty much divided, half men, half women, which is fine. You know, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. What do you notice? What are the differences in the way they approach the task?
I think, I'm a talker, as you may have noticed on Twitter. So with women, generally, you have more of a conversation. They're more sort of, they know my life, I know their life. With men, it's a little, they seem to be more focused on actually, you know, you don't really have to talk so much to men, let me put it that way. I think that, that would be my biggest difference with training. Of course, it's easier for men I just had a guy who just did 5 sessions. He's never lifted a weight in his life, and he was 74. And he's a friend of a friend, and we bumped into each other, and I was training another younger woman outside, and he asked me. So he's 74, he's never lifted weights, and he just wanted to learn a program. And I find that something that he could do by himself. I find that there's kind of a very focused, usually a shorter term goal with men. They want to learn, like I trained a bodybuilder once, and he wanted to learn different ways of working the muscle so he could, you know, be a better, have a better body as a bodybuilder. So it just depends. But women, usually it's more of an hour's break from if you're an attorney or if you have a high powered bank job or you just have 4 kids, you just want an hour away. So they're kind of happy just to work out and sort of have a relationship like that. Of course, then you'll get someone, you know, who's like, I have a friend doing a 100-mile race this weekend in Virginia. So you always have people, women who are like that. But did that make any sense at all?
No, it absolutely makes sense. And it is fascinating to hear that your experience, if I understand this right, is that women tend to use their time with you more as a exercise and social outlet, a time away from other responsibilities, whereas for a man, when a man calls you, it's usually because he has a very specific goal in mind and possibly wants to have your help in designing a program rather than so much of the carry through and relationship. Go ahead.
It's funny. That's true. Though I do, as I said, my oldest client is a guy. So somewhere in there, it kind of melds together. And obviously, you're not going to keep a relationship going with someone if you know they don't like you. if they walk in and go, oh, I had a woman once, she was just so like, I don't want to do this, don't speak to me. It's like, I can't train you, this is insane. If you don't want to do it, it's okay, but, you know. So you have to like people and you have to like what you're doing and you have to enjoy it.
Well, you know what? That is hilarious. That is hilarious and a perfect setup for the story that I am dying to tell you because
okay.
I have never, I mean, I guess when I say this, I'm going to give it away. When I say I have never hired a personal trainer, but there was a time a couple of years ago when I investigated it and went down that path. And I spend my winters in a condo in Texas. It's right on the golf course, and I was on my way there and became aware that someone who was a neighbor of mine is a former CEO of a major restaurant chain who, upon retirement, became a personal trainer. And you know this about me. You know I'm rather uppity. And so I said, oh, my goodness, well, that would be the perfect personal trainer for me, because here's this guy who's worked at very high levels and, you know, very well connected and so forth. He might be someone I'd be interested in. Huh?
I said, I get it, Kay.
I get it. Okay. So probably everyone gets it. And so anyway, I contacted him, and, it, you know, that went fine. We set up a time for us to have an evaluation, and we met each other, and I liked him fine. And, you know, assumed he liked me, because I just go into things believing that I charm everyone, right? And he said to me, I'm not sure. I mean, what? Well, I'll tell you that in a moment, but he said, I'm not sure that we can work together. I'm not sure that I want to work with you. And I was shocked by that. I was really shocked. He said, you know, you just, to me, you just seem very resistant. You you disagree too much. You don't, you know, you just don't seem like someone that I could help, because you just, you know, you tend to disagree. And I was very puzzled by that, because I hadn't noticed such a thing, and I had no bad will for him, and I didn't feel resistant to what he was saying. But when he threw something out there, if I thought differently, or if I knew differently, or whatever, I would, you know, I would certainly tell him so. And so, you know, we left that appointment with the idea that probably I would be hiring him, but, you know, it was something we didn't firmly establish it. And I got home and I got thinking about it, and I said, I get it. He is a CEO. He is the former CEO of a major corporation. He is totally unaccustomed to having anyone disagree with him on the slightest, in the slightest bit. And he, you know, what he was really reacting to what I think I said, that I viewed as, you know, conversational, but he viewed them as a lot of negativity. So I called him up and I said, you know, I think you're right. I think we're probably not terribly suited to each other. And so that never happened. But one of the things that I asked him when we were having our conversation about working together, I asked him what he saw, how he saw the nature of the relationship. And he said the weirdest thing to me. To me, I mean, I think it's weird, and I want to know if you do too. He said, I view it like a good marriage. I view it, and I just thought, he said, like a good marriage. And I thought, you know, as a divorced woman, you know, I'm not looking for a marriage with my personal fitness trainer. So that, you know, that struck me as really odd, and I told him so, and I think that was one of the things that kind of bugged him. But it begs the question, Helen, what do you think is the best relationship? Are you a drill sergeant? Is it a priest-confessor relationship? Is it a teacher-student relationship, or is it a marriage? How do you view it?
It's not a marriage, but I think it's all of those things. I think that's the idea. I mean, to me, that's the idea of it. I mean, you're a personal trainer. What you do with one person, even the relationships, you do end up being very close to people. I have a one lady, she does 3 hours a week. So you spend 3 hours a week with someone.
Wow.
I don't spend... Yeah, that's a lot of time. So you are going to, I mean, she doesn't always do 3 hours a week, but, you know, we spend a lot of time together. So you are just in the, you know, scope of things, you're going to build a relationship of some kind. But it just depends. I'll have a client who wants to, you know, push herself so much that at the end she's exhausted, tired, and crawling under a rock. And then you'll have another client that will go, you know, I have a guy right now who said to me, I don't want to get tired. So, you know, you do it differently. And my women, I would say I have very close, I have close relationships. I have a husband and wife. They both train. They've trained separately. I have good relationships, obviously, with all of them, but it is different. But none of them have asked me to marry them, men or women, so far. So I think that's a really odd thing to say. I can't imagine going in and say, hi. I say, so what is it you want to do? Because my plan is that our relationship become like a good marriage. So far, I haven't used that line, and it's probably not going to get in there, Kate.
Yeah, it certainly didn't work on me, and you know, and this guy,
Feeling he hasn't got a great personal training business. He may have like some young 30-year-old guys that are trying to get his contacts or something, but I don't know that how many people would say, "Oh, okay, sounds like a plan," you know.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, you know, obviously we've already talked about the fact that you came into the career from a different career path, and I think you would have to say it would be the unusual corporate CEO of a major corporation who would decide that he wanted, you know, he wanted to do this in retirement. But anyway, so no, it was one of those life experiences. Now, Helen, here is one thing I've got to know. And for the most part, you work your clients out. You work them out at their homes or places they choose. But how do you feel about what we shall refer to lovingly as fitness apparatus? Obviously you are doing some weight training with your clients. Do you like weight machines? Do you like free weights? Do you like free body weight? How do you come down on all that?
A lot of my clients have gyms in their buildings, so we do work out in gyms. It doesn't really matter. You can train someone with nothing. You can just use their own body weight, or you can use machines, or you can use free weights, or you can use bands in people's houses and exercise balls and medicine balls and everything. I always say this to people, your bicep, which is the front of the top of your arm, it's a muscle that's attached to the bone in your forearm. All that does is when it contracts, it pulls your arm up. It doesn't matter what.
It does more than that. It looks pretty, particularly if you're someone like Michelle Obama, right? So it does more than lift your arm. It's very decorative.
It is so decorative. But you need to have good shoulders, too, because your shoulder comes a little way down your arm there, and so you need a nice shoulder so it goes in to show your bicep, like Michelle. She's great arms. But other than – so really, I mean, other than the plastic suits that people seem to think is going to make them – water is not fat. Sweating is not necessarily – it's okay, but you need to re-drink. As soon as you drink, you'll gain that weight. The ab machines are okay. I don't ever use them in a gym, but if people can't feel their abs, then that might be good. But no, people buy all these magic things. That's the problem with the stuff that you get for homes. It's not magic. If I knew how to really climb through the microphone and make you fit in an hour, I would be Rush Limbaugh right now. I would have.
That is really true. But let's don't give up on it. However, I want to tell you how I feel about some of those things you mentioned. Some you didn't. You have your dumbbells and your kettlebells. More about that later. But it bothers me because they're not musical. I mean, don't you think if they're called Bell? They ought to be a little, like a dumbbell ought to have a bell. It ought to be like a...
It could have like a picture of Sarah Palin on the weight.
Well, that's an idea. That's an idea. We're heavy into product development here now, aren't we? A dumbbell with photos of Sarah Palin and their musical. You know, that
but it
might
be like a Southern Belle kind of theme, like a dumb Southern Belle. We could possibly come up with somebody that could ornate,
well,
you know.
That is a great idea, and, you know, one of our former guests on Women Are Not Funny radio, Martha Giffen, I don't know if you know her, but she's quite the Southern Belle, so that might be a possibility. But anyway, so dumbbells kind of bother me, but apparently we can improve them, and I think you have some great ideas, and I think my idea of making it musical. I have some kettlebells that
yes.
I have had now for about a year, and they are very good-looking. My living room in this condo is decorated in black, red, and kiwi colored. And these kettlebells are kiwi colored. And I bought them with the idea that I might do something with them, but mainly they're just good looking and they mock me. They're in my living room and they mock me. It's like every time I see them, there they are. I'm not doing anything with them. And the fact of the matter is they scare me a little bit. I'm a little bit scared of them because I think that's about their only use. But I did now, I'm familiar with and saw a video on YouTube of an exercise called the Turkish Get Up. Are you familiar with that?
I don't know. No. I mean, I probably know. You told me what they did. Was it with the kettlebells?
They did use a kettlebell eventually. And, you know, I was intrigued by the exercise because my business partner is Turkish. And so, I thought, well, the Turkish get up, you know, that might be the way to go. But you start out on the floor first, and then on this YouTube video, they demonstrate it with a shoe first and then a kettlebell. But you start out on the floor with your arm upright and you're holding a kettlebell, and then there are a variety of poses you go through as you stand with that arm prone the entire time, you know, holding the weight. And so that's really what it boils down to. That's my crummy.
I dream of genie outfit, and I think you're done, Kay.
Well, I don't know, but you know, they start out, like I said, demonstrating it with a shoe. If I could do it, if I could, you know, just stand up in that position holding a shoe, that might be an accomplishment enough. And you're right, if I were wearing an I Dream of Genie outfit, that might somehow mitigate the awkward appearance that it would have. But you mentioned the ball. Do you work with your clients with those big balls?
I do. But one thing I do, and it's true with the ball too, if you look at the exercise videos or you get a magazine and they'll say, oh, this looks really good, do this with your ball, you know, your exercise ball, and then you actually try it, and then you realize there are three Olympic athletes who can actually do that move without falling off or breaking their neck. So most of it is just so, not all of it, that's an exaggeration, but so if you watch the videos, sometimes like that move, what you were just saying, I would just be worried my clients would drop it and have the kettlebell land on their teeth and have to go and get all new teeth, and I just can't even imagine that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They actually are very, very scary. And
you can break teeth with a pound weight. You don't need to. You know, it's just a piece of iron, so you don't want to drop it on you.
Well, absolutely. But like I told you, these are very good looking and they're very seductive because there is that belief, and you are right. You know that sometimes, because if we are people, which many of us are, and I certainly count myself among them, people who want to take action, you can confuse yourself that buying a kettlebell is the same thing as taking action. You know, it's taking action, but it doesn't really lead to anything except being mocked by your kettlebells.
Yeah, it's kind of a proof that you didn't really mean it.
Well,
which is not good.
Well, I suppose, but, you know, I am totally able to seduce myself that I do mean it. And one way that a person, I'm not saying me, I'm just saying a person, could seduce herself is by buying fitness DVDs, because that is also another fitness action that is very easy to take. You know,
yes.
You just pull up Amazon on the web and you can order a DVD, and it's just amazing. And it just arrives, you know, arrives in your home, and then you can watch it. You can watch
right.
the DVD, because
and
goodness knows, you know, you don't have to. I mean, if you're watching it, you can really make a case for needing to watch it before you do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then you can watch it and you can say things to yourself like, well, wow, that looks pretty good.
I could do that.
I could do that. But when you're working with your clients, do you advise that they use DVDs on days that you're not with them?
I have never told anybody to use a DVD on days that you know what happens is, I don't know if you remember when Oprah came out with she has that trainer, I can't remember what his name is, and
I just thought of his name. His name's Bob Green, right?
Right. So I think she wrote a book with him, and it came out, and it was the worst thing that could have happened, because everybody read it, and every client would suddenly say, so this is what Oprah says. Well, that's good, but, you know, you're not Oprah. So I don't suggest to other people to get a DVD of anybody other than me. But, you know, if you're serious and you live in, I don't know, somewhere where it would be hard to have access to, and you don't know how to do anything, I don't think there's any harm in buying a DVD. But they're boring. I mean, you can only do the same thing so many times. But if it starts you on the road, you do it once and then you really like it, then you buy another, then you decide you're going to do something, so then it's good. So I don't think it's bad.
Yeah,
and it's very different. You know, if you get a color scheme that matches the green, you know, thing.
No, Well, I have a collection of exercise DVDs, but it's kind of a theme in my life. You know, it's like I live on the golf course, and I have over 10 pairs of very good looking golf shoes, and you know, every year I haven't done it this year yet, but every year I buy a new putter. You know, because I think that will improve my game. But it's kind of getting your head to where you realize that it's probably not the new putter that makes your game better. It's getting out there and putting the ball, right? It's not the act of buying the new putter. It is the act of buying your are actually using it. So obviously I need to get fit in my head, and I probably need some brain food, and that leads me to my next question for you. Do you also advise your clients on nutrition?
I do, but not down to sort of selling the stuff and any of that. I want people to it's a lifestyle change. It's not, you can go on the cabbage diet and you lose weight on every single diet you go on to. If you eat less, you will lose weight. You could even just eat chocolate or just eat ice cream, and you will lose weight if you only eat X amount of calories. But you really want people to get that French fries aren't a vegetable. Jamie Oliver stole my line then. I've been saying that for years in that show. And you want people to understand that the Atkins diet, where you can eat cheesecake, is not really the plan. So I'll tell people what they should be eating, and I'll go over their diet book if they'll keep a food diary, which is few and far between, I might add, and tell them stuff that they don't realize is fat is has more calories than they plan. But really, something is the best thing is something like Weight Watchers that really shows you how to eat. You know, so because you don't want to go off a diet and gain twice as much weight as you lost when you were on a diet, you know?
Well, of course not. And, you know, one of the things that I love about you is that, and it happened around the time that you and I first met, you were a big fan of Kay Ballard's Man Pleasing Lemon Cream Pie.
Oh, I made that pie.
You did, and you pointed out that it has about 100 million calories, and I think that is underestimating it. So it's really not, you know, it is really not for eating, for particularly for, you know, women. It's for pleasing men. That's all it's for, and that's all it's useful for. But, you know, my problem now, Helen, is a strange one for me. I have no appetite at all, absolutely no appetite at all, and so I'm having a hard time making myself eat. And on last week's show, I was telling about having learned just that very day about pesticides on celery, you know, and I thought, oh, no, there's no hope, because I'm a little bit squeamish about you know, foods,
you know,
anyway. And so hearing that there's pesticides in celery, I just went, oh, look, who wants celery?
It's harder people don't believe this, but it's harder to gain weight than to lose weight. I had a young girl once, she was only about 19, and she had been sick, and she was trying desperately to gain weight. It's much, much harder to gain weight, because people that are naturally, it's just harder to gain weight. Nobody believes that, but it's
well,
true.
I have always heard that, too, and I'm not trying to gain weight, but I do totally understand that if you have lost your appetite, that such things are possible. Let's put it that way. I wouldn't, until this happened, I wouldn't have believed it was possible, but it is, and I don't expect it to last forever, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how long it lasts. But, so you don't think many people are successful with food logs. How about exercise logs? Is that something that you encourage your clients to do, or do you keep a log for them? How do you come on down on that?
I would say that if you're a bodybuilder, man or woman, that kind of intense trying to really do specifics to that extent, then you probably would keep a log. Some trainers do keep logs for everyone. I usually remember, to be honest with you. Some people, I'll keep a log if people really look for a log. And the only people that would look for logs are men, you know, for once in a while. But if you do a bench press with a man, not that you're going to do that, okay, but if you do, believe me, in 5 years' time, they will still remember what their top weight for bench pressing was. It's just how they are.
Well, so, that's, you know what,
the food log is really good. It's just that people won't do it. I think that is really, really good for people to do that. If you write down what you eat and you're honest about it, then you'll be able to count your points or count your calories, and then you'll lose weight. But that's kind of one of those scary things that's like your kettlebells, you know, kind of just lays there threatening you with recrimination for not putting it out.
I'm curious, just kind of as an aside, one of our, she actually was unable to be our guest, someone who had been scheduled to be our guest for last week, who is an exercise instructor, had tweeted that men are much more likely to hurt themselves or get hurt in weight-related exercises because she said because they don't listen. Do you think that's true? I mean, you talked about them being
the bodybuilder guy I was telling you about, one time we were at a gym and he was doing bench presses, but he was doing them on a decline, and I was spotting him, and suddenly I don't know what he did, but he had too much weight on there. I wasn't training him, I was just there at the time, and I walked over, and the bottom, you know, it was too heavy, you know. So, yeah, that's true. She's right. She's definitely
well,
right
here
on
is,
that.
This is kind of a change of subject, Helen, because I'm curious about this. You are active in social media, and I must say you do a very good job because you are so well-loved by everyone who interacts with you there. Is that in any way related to your business? Have you gotten clients from your Twittering and Facebook work?
No, I do teach. Jersey City has a free class for exercise and that needed reamping at one point because I had had a bunch of people that wanted it at an odd time and I changed the time for them, and then I needed to rechange the time, so I put it out on Facebook. It revived my class. Jersey City has free classes, certain programs, which is really good, and I do them for them. And so that way, but no, I've never really, I love tweeting because I, you know, I really do get into the politics, and I just love, there's so many characters on there, and there's so many really good links that people put up, and I just have fun. I really enjoy it. I put the TV on and I put this screen on at the same time, and it stops me moving, so that's really good for me. So.
Yeah, well, you're right. It is very fun and it's very social, and a lot of times I think it is, you know, it's just a relaxing thing to do. But so here is what I want to know, and we can end our conversation this way. What, and, you know, it's clear to me, it's clear to anyone who is listening that you are very successful at what you do. What do you think is your secret to being successful?
I think I genuinely believe that if you're physically feeling well, your life is better. And you'll have a happier life if you're, because so much of our moods is chemical, and it's not all one day. You'll stand at the same thing one day as the next. One day you'll feel good and one day you won't. And I just would love that people, love it when people get that. And I really like helping people, and I couldn't do their brains, so I'm happy with the body part. I guess that's what it is. I really think it's important, and I really wish people would, more people would know that they would feel better if they were healthier, I guess is really what I would like to, you know, talk out to the world.
It so comes through that you feel that way, and it's so delightful. It really kind of inspires me on a couple of levels. One is perhaps I need to reach the kind of financial success that would permit me to have a private jet so I could fly you in and have you work me out from time to time, you know, assuming I could make enough to afford you. But the other I might do in the meantime is just take your advice and try to remember, because you are right, exercise does make you feel better. And so besides any other reasons that stand alongside, that one is huge, isn't it?
It is. Well, and obviously health-wise, but... You know.
Right, but what's the point of being healthy if you don't feel good in your long life? Helen, this will not come as a surprise to you. I think you know it because I have stated it on many occasions, and almost from the first moment I met you in social media, I adore you, and I am so thrilled that you are my friend, and thank you so much for being our guest today. You are
you
are just so much fun, and I will check in, and we've identified several projects, several ways to go forward together. We have some, a line
the
that
movie.
We're going to develop a line
Don't
of...
Get
what?
The movie. I said, don't forget the movie, Kay.
Yeah, the movie, my, you know, I'm taking over your career, and then we have developed this product, this Sarah Palin musical dumbbell that I think will be very popular, and also an alternative Martha Given dumbbell. But I can tell you, Martha's no dummy. She is a Southern Belle.
No, we'll have to call
those the Southern Belles. Anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Guys.